Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, host of Your Call. You're listening to the Project 2025 What's in It podcast, a special series from KALW Public Media about the far right's agenda outlined in what they're calling Project 2025 Mandate for Leadership, the Conservative Promise. This Heritage Foundation-led plan lays out a comprehensive agenda to transform the United States into a conservative Christian nation under Donald Trump. Project 2025 would dismantle the administrative state and ensure arch-conservative rule for decades to come. It would affect all aspects of life and would be implemented by expanding presidential powers and eliminating federal agencies. One note before we dig in. When this show originally aired live on KALW, we took calls and emails. If you have a comment or perspective to share, email us at project2025@kalw.org. Today, we continue our series on Project 2025, the Heritage Foundation-led authoritarian roadmap for the next Trump administration and what they call Trumpism. More than 110 conservative and far-right organizations have signed on, including well-known groups like the American Family Association, the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, and Moms for Liberty. And then there are the not-so-well-known groups like Stop Abusive and Violent Environments, the League of American Workers, and the American Moment. We will discuss the policy objectives and players behind these groups, we'll follow the money, and we'll piece together the vast network behind this authoritarian playbook. What role do these groups play in other aspects of our society? What do we need to know about their work? Today, we are joined by three guests. Ann Nelson is a lecturer in the fields of international affairs, media, and human rights. She's the author of many books, including Shadow Network, Media, Money, and the Secret Hub of the Radical Right, which exposes the network of fundamentalist organizations and oil barons who've carried out a 40-year mission to take over the levers of government in the U.S. and beyond. In a recent piece for the Washington Spectator, Ann Nelson writes that over a third of the groups behind Project 2025 receive funding from the Koch Network, and almost two-thirds are funded by Leonard Leo Philanthropies. Hi, Ann. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
Lisa Graves is the founder and executive director of True North Research, an investigative watchdog that works with journalists and researchers to shine a light on the dark money fueling regressive agendas targeting vital institutions in our republic. Hi, Lisa. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Hey, Rose. It's a joy to be on your show and honor to be on with Anne and Rachel and you. Thank you.
Well, thank you. We're also joined by Rachel Leingang. Rachel covers democracy and misinformation for The Guardian. In a piece called The Force Behind Project 2025, Rachel reports on the Heritage Foundation's president, Kevin Roberts' vision to institutionalize Trumpism. Hi, Rachel. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be here.
Well, it's great to have all of you. A general question to start, how would you describe Project 2025? And let's start off with you. In your latest piece, you write that it would dismantle the federal government, deregulate industry, and eliminate consumer protections and public health measures while installing a regime controlled by fossil fuel interests and the religious right.
I think that sums it up. It goes back decades. And these religious conservatives and the fossil fuel interests have been working at this really since at least the 1970s. And Project 2025 is the most elaborate expression of the policies they've been promoting and the one that's most possible for them to achieve.
Lisa, how would you describe Project 2025?
Well, I think it's the way that Anne said, but also... In the words of the leader of Project 2025, in essence, the leader of the Heritage Foundation, a man named Kevin Roberts, they've described this as institutionalizing Trumpism. And what that means is really trying to move forward with a really radical reactionary agenda to fire thousands of federal employees, to change the rules that we live by in America, in a number of areas, including changing dramatic changes in terms of reproductive rights, limiting access to abortion, and even information about contraception, and also just really extraordinary an extraordinary invocation of power. For example, rationalizing and attempting to operationalize the threatened raids to have mass arrests of immigrants, including people who are U.S. citizens whose parents were are immigrants. It really is extraordinary, and that's not all. It also includes really disruptive and I think dangerous proposals for our economy. And also for our world in terms of trade powers and military powers in ways that would just be deeply disruptive. And I think, quite frankly, would throw us into a US depression and a worldwide depression, if not greater chaos.
Rachel, in addition to the piece you wrote about the Heritage Foundation's President Kevin Roberts, you've written a number of other pieces about Project 2025. What really stands out for you in what you've learned?
So just so I don't duplicate what others have said, I'll focus here on how I think this is different than other efforts to influence presidential administrations, which is something that I think most think tanks try to do to some degree. The breadth of Project 2025 is really sort of unparalleled. It's very detailed, and the amount of groups behind it who helped authored it and want to usher it in, it is much larger than I think we've seen in previous efforts to do something similar. The other thing I'll say is this, the roadmap that we're discussing, that's only one part of the plan. They also are working to sort of vet the personnel that could staff the next Trump administration. And that's a huge undertaking, especially because they want to have far more political appointees. And then they also want to train those folks who could be political appointees on how they believe the government should operate. So that's what, two additional prongs of this. And then they also want to play an explicit role in transitioning, should Trump win, transitioning his administration, into the White House. So they're really looking to have, a multi-pronged approach of influence on a second Trump administration in a way that I think has not really happened, at least not this level of public and explicit policy and personnel goals, in anything that I've seen.
Rachel, what is it like to report on these organizations? We're going to talk about your piece about Kevin Roberts and the Heritage Foundation later in the show. Heritage and Roberts did not respond to your repeated requests for comment. I just wonder, when you look at these 100 groups, more than 100 groups, what does it take to really figure out who they are? I have to say, I was really struck by two groups in there, the Frederick Douglass Foundation and Native Americans for Sovereignty and Preservation. Those two groups made me really kind of stop me in my tracks. And I thought, okay, I've never heard of these groups. And then you go to their website and they have very nice websites. And you really have to do a lot of digging, go to their Instagram, read their about section. So I just wonder, when you really try to figure out who's behind these groups, who funds them, what does that involve? How easy or difficult is it?
Well, a lot of them have fairly benign descriptions of what they do and how they do it. It is increasingly difficult. Like you mentioned, Heritage and Mr. Roberts would not speak with me in any kind of way about this. And that's something that, as journalists, we repeatedly run into. These groups want to control the message that they put out there, and don't want to have the liability of talking to a journalist. That, in the course of my career, has become, very commonplace. I wish it wasn't. I wish it was a lot easier to talk to people, and I wish people were a lot more candid about, their funding. I think, the way that these groups are funded is increasingly difficult to untangle. They do share, in some cases, common funding sources. Like, I know NBC News had reported that many of the groups, I believe, like about half, had gotten some form of funding from Leonard Leo associated groups. So, they share some common ties. And I would say they all share a common goal in trying to advance these policies. There are some big names missing from the list of who signed on, but this is, more or less a conservative consensus of what they want to see in a Trump administration.
Which groups are missing that surprised you?
So, the American Enterprise Institute is not on there. They're a conservative group in DC that I'm sure would also like to have influence on the Trump administration to some degree. The America First Policy Institute is not on there. I don't think there is America First Legal, I believe. There are some groups that I think, in an effort to not necessarily align themselves with everything that these groups are doing, have tried other, ways of will try other ways to seek influence on an incoming president.
And you really wrote about so many of these groups in your book, Shadow Network, Media, Money, and the Secret Hub of the Radical Right. You also write about a number of these groups and follow the money in the piece you wrote for the Washington Spectator. What does it take to uncover the main goal of these groups, who's behind them, and the money that's funding them?
Well, the way that I approach it is, I started in my book with the Council for National Policy, which is a networking organization, an umbrella organization that has secret meetings, two or three times a year, many times in California, by the way. And they work out the coordination between the donors and the organizations and their media platforms. And we shouldn't discount the media platforms because one of the active partners is Salem Media, which turns out to be a really massive radio network plus a profusion of online digital platforms. So what is really innovative about them is this level of coordination between the mega donors, like the DeVos family and the fossil fuel interests, and the strategists, like the Heritage Foundation and Leonard Leo, and then the people on the ground who do canvassing, like the Susan B. Anthony anti-abortion organization and the National Rifle Association, and then the media platforms. And they all work in a high level of coordination, which I think makes them more effective. So for me, I try to follow the money through the tax filings, and I have to experience a lot of their media products to see who's saying what to whom.
Can you tell us more about the media platforms that we might not be familiar with? People who maybe get their news from different public radio stations, go online to the big papers and some independent media outlets, but might not really know about some of these platforms you're talking about.
My research was really informed by the fact that I'm from Oklahoma, and I came upon them when I was visiting family there. So I learned that there were actually thousands of fundamentalist Christian radio stations in, especially in states between the coasts, where people spend a lot of drive time, and you just go from one of these to the next. And then Salem Media also has a lot of right-wing talk radio that are, and these stations are more prevalent in the blue-collar states like Michigan and Wisconsin. So I have long argued that radio is a very powerful medium to this day in the United States. And I know a lot of people who think that it begins and ends with National Public Radio, but it does not. And in fact, a lot of these stations have stronger signals and stronger reaches than the local NPR stations in these areas. So then you also have Salem Media proliferating in terms of digital platforms, whether it's Red State or Town Hall, and then they coordinate very closely with Breitbart. And then there's a whole world of YouTube and podcasts. So one of the members of the Council for National Policy is Charlie Kirk from Turning Point USA. He's got his own media empire, and then so does the Family Research Council with Tony Perkins. So when you put all of this together and have them all speaking in one voice, it becomes a very powerful mechanism.
How big is their reach? Do we have any idea?
I don't think we do. Because I tried very hard to get, good numbers on radio listenership, but I think, it's very hard to get them. And how on earth do you track all the people who are listening to radio in their cars and so on?
Right.
I just feel that a lot of what they do is highly targeted. So it's not necessarily a question of the number of people in the audience. They are targeting swing states. They're targeting battleground districts. They're coordinating very closely with evangelical churches, especially Pentecostal churches. So there's a whole level of coordination that would be largely invisible to the rest of us unless you were intentionally following it.
Ann Nelson is a lecturer in the fields of international affairs, media, and human rights. She's the author of Shadow Network, Media, Money, and the Secret Hub of the Radical Right. You can find the latest piece she wrote about Project 2025 for the Washington Spectator at kalw.org and then search for Your Call. Rachel Leingang covers democracy and misinformation for The Guardian. She just wrote a piece called The Force Behind Project 2025. It's about the Heritage Foundation's President Kevin Roberts. Lisa Graves is founder and executive director of True North Research, an investigative watchdog group that does an incredible job of following the money. Lisa, you and your team of researchers and journalists have really exposed the Federalist Society and looked at where they get their money and how they are able to have so much influence. So can you tell us more about what is involved when you look at these more than 100 groups behind Project 2025? What is involved in figuring out who they are, what their end game is, and where they get their money?
That's a great question. And obviously, I'm on this show with some real pros in terms of investigating, examining these groups. But we have been looking deeply at the Leonard Leo financial network, in essence, and the role that it has played in capturing the U.S. Supreme Court and lower federal courts and state Supreme Courts and other levers of power like state attorneys general positions. Some of that is from, you know, public filings that are required at the federal level for donations to particular types of groups under the IRS code, like 527s, like RAGA, the Republican Attorneys General Association. Others, as Ann mentioned, are through, you know, looking at the IRS 990 filings of groups that are part of that network, like the Judicial Crisis Network or Heritage Foundation or many of the groups that, as you mentioned, Rose, that are part of this Project 2025 that have been funded by Leo, have been funded by the Koch Network as well. So we do that as well as doing a lot of work looking at material that's in the public domain, but where the dots have not been connected, where people who were maybe formerly more obscure have now risen to positions of power, and how they're networked in with other power players in order to advance this agenda. And that's one of the reasons why I'm really excited about some of the work we've been doing to analyze and provide biographical descriptions of the people involved in Project 2025 or who have validated it or said that they're going to implement parts of it, including people like J.D. Vance, but also Paul Danz, Kevin Roberts, John McEntee, numerous other former Trump officials or aides who are integral to this Project 2025 agenda, which I think, as Rachel said, and as you mentioned, Rose, and as Ann wrote so eloquently in the Washington Spectator, this agenda is something that Heritage has put out a number of times over the years since 1980, but this one is the most radical, most reactionary, most extreme, and it's also the most plugged in because so many of the people who have written it are former Trump officials and are planning to be former Trump officials again if he were to win, or who have positions of power, former or current senators like J.D. Vance and other members of Congress who have embraced some of these radical proposals to implement this agenda. And that personnel piece is particularly, salient. So just for example, Vance pledged that the Heritage Foundation was, you know, quote, going to play a major role in helping us figure out how to govern at the White House, at the Senate, at the House, and all across our country. And then the Heritage Foundation issued its Project 2025 mandate, which includes, you know, that effort to fire all these expert civil servants and replace them with loyalists. So then what did Vance say, has Vance said in the past? He said that he supports mass firings of federal employees and he said that Trump should, quote, fire every single mid-level bureaucrat, every civil servant, that's his quote, and, quote, replace them with our people. That's a fully aligned set of issues. And we know that there's been some distancing efforts by Donald Trump to say he doesn't even know what the project is, even though he spoke at the Heritage Foundation, and even though his aides and his national press secretary appears in one of the recruitment videos for the Heritage Foundation. But so, you know, there's a lot of disinformation going on out there. I guess I would just conclude by saying there's information that journalists and investigators are putting forward for people to better understand how grave the risk is from Project 2025, where the money's coming from, who the key personnel are, and why we have to come together and make sure everyone understands the threat we face, because this really is an effort to operationalize this authoritarian, Christian nationalist, theocratic, autocratic, plutocratic agenda for our country. And it's one that I think most Americans would deeply disagree with.
We're going to go to break soon, but I'd like to ask you all what your thoughts are on how all of these groups managed to come together, because you have some groups that are really on board for tax cuts for the wealthy and no regulation, especially when it comes to oil and gas pipelines. And then you've got groups that solely want to ensure that abortion is legal in all cases across the country. And so I just wonder, how were all of these groups able to come together to agree to an over 900-page document? Rachel, do you want to take that first?
Sure. My guess on this is that there is strength in numbers. So when after the first Trump administration, the belief by some in the conservative movement was that he essentially wasn't prepared enough to implement, you know, the types of policies that they wanted to see. And so this effort is a way to allow the Trump administration, you know, a second one, to hit the ground running. So I think since Trump left office, there's been a lot of effort among conservative groups to work together to have one voice in advancing sort of policies. And so they, you know, the groups that signed on may not have they may not endorse all the ideas in it. They may not have even read the extent of it. But their issues that they're most concerned about are in there. And because they're collectively working with one voice on this issue, they believe that that's the way to have the most influence.
Right. And what's been discussed is that in the first Trump term, there were people who stood up to him. And the goal for the second Trump term is to make sure that does not happen.
Yeah,
Right,
absolutely.
Rachel?
And even just like the logistics of what they've suggested in terms of adding far more political appointees in government, it would be so it's such an incredible lift to try to add this many more political appointees. Obviously, you lose a lot of expertise and you have far more people beholden to a political line rather than the expertise that they've built over the course of their careers. That alone is, I think, the one of the biggest pieces, and perhaps one that the American public does not necessarily understand the breadth of yet. Because I don't know, you know, when you hear civil servant, I don't know what people associate that with necessarily. But it this that a aspect of it could impact all of our daily lives profoundly if there are far more people using politics as their main qualification for their jobs rather than experience.
We should say that Axios's Mike Allen recently interviewed Donald Trump Jr. and asked him what his role would be in a second Trump term. And he said that he wants to block the bad actors. Quote, "I want to block the liars. I want to block the guys that are pretending they're with you. You guys pick the guy that's right. I want a veto power to cut out each and every one of those people." So basically saying that if you're not a MAGA loyalist, he will get rid of you. And that's one thing that a Project 2025, especially Kevin Roberts, has talked about, just saying this is the change that we want to see in the second Trump administration. All yes men and women, no one to stand up to Donald Trump. Today, we're continuing our series on Project 2025, the Heritage Foundation-led authoritarian roadmap for the next Trump administration and what they're calling Trumpism. They say that this is going well beyond Trump. It's Trumpism, the new conservatism. It includes more than 110 conservative and far-right organizations, some you've definitely heard of, the American Family Association and Moms for Liberty, and some you probably have not heard of, the League of American Workers and Stop Abusive and Violent Environments. Today we're joined by Ann Nelson, author of Shadow Network, Media, Money, and the Secret Hub of the Radical Right. Lisa Graves is founder and executive director of True North Research, an investigative watchdog group that shines a light on the dark money fueling regressive agendas. Rachel Leingang covers democracy and misinformation for The Guardian. We'll be back after this. Today, we continue our series on Project 2025 by talking about the Heritage Foundation and the more than 110 conservative and far-right organizations that have signed on to this authoritarian roadmap. Today, we're joined by Ann Nelson, Lisa Graves, and Rachel Leingang. You can learn more about them by going to kalw.org. Let's hear from Ann and Lisa about the groups that have come together and how they've managed to do this. And then we're going to get to phone calls because we have a lot of people waiting on the line. So, Anne, what are your thoughts about how these groups all came together to agree to an over 900-page plan?
Yeah, well, a lot of them are shell organizations. And again, having followed them pretty closely for the last 6 or 8 years when I've been on this beat, they may change their names, they may change their URLs online, but it's the same people doing the same operations. And they also have this quality of projection. So the Frederick Douglass organization has been around for a while, and they have taken the name of Frederick Douglass to endorse policies that would take rights away from African American voters. And Susan B. Anthony herself never wrote anything about abortion. And the scholars who cover her life have made this very clear, but her name has been appropriated by an anti-abortion group to make it sound like it's in support of women, but it's actually, again, taking away rights from women in their name. So a lot of these organizations are involved in funding that is cross-funding from the same big donors. I mentioned the DeVos family. We've talked about Leonard Leo, but there's also the Bradley Foundation in Milwaukee that's a major donor. And so they kind of start these organizations and deploy them. So, for example, Moms for America, that's another one that they've generated, and that is coordinated with other organizations like the Leadership Institute and the Family Research Council, which have online training for school board disruption. So they're called grassroots, but other people call them AstroTurf because their grassroots quality is fallacious. And it kind of started with the Tea Party, which was launched in 2010 with massive amounts of Koch money. And the Tea Party Patriots is still a very active part of this operation.
Hmm. Lisa, what would you like to add?
Well, you know, a couple things. You know, one is this question of strange bedfellows, that this idea that, you know, there are differences between some of these groups. I think the real case in point on that for me in terms of that, the mythology of that is sometimes I will hear reporters for corporate outlets describe Koch, Charles Koch, as pro-choice. And I tell them, you know, prove it, quite frankly, because all of the groups that all the politicians that he supports, all of the PACs of those politicians he supports are anti-choice. So there is this sort of mythology in a way about the libertarians being, you know, pro-liberty, but in fact, for power, for the sake of power, you know, Koch has routinely supported groups that are vehemently anti-choice, or as well as anti-gay. There was even funding recently from one of the core Koch groups to Alliance Defending Freedom. And so what's really happened, in my view, over the past, 10, 20 years in particular, although it began, I think, in the 80s, is this sort of unification between the religious right, the libertarian right, the conservative right, and a sort of takeover or co-optation of those core levers of power by coming together rather than infighting. And so in some ways, this Project 2025 reflects, I'm not sure I would call it that maturation, but that unity of purpose, which is power. The purpose is power. And in essence, they are willing to join together to get power to accomplish this joint agenda, which really is, in my view, an authoritarian, theocratic agenda, and one that, you know, people are just now coming to grips with. The awareness of Project 2025 that's happening is really powerful. And there's more to know, which is that it's not just a theoretical threat. This is an operationalized plan. And just to, you know, make that clear, these are not just my words. These are the words of Kevin Roberts, the person who helms the Heritage Foundation. He said, wield power when you have it. He has said, every woke busybody in the federal bureaucracy could be fired, sanctuary cities and states defunded, CRT could be canceled. A president could, in a single afternoon, do this, basically. And he's talked about how, in fact, this could happen on the afternoon of an inauguration, that Schedule F, that program to fire civil servants, to replace them with loyalists, could happen instantly in terms of the execution of that strategy, the reinstatement of that executive order, and then the operationalizing of that to basically hollow out the government, including civil servant jobs that have also not just been filled with devoted public servants, but also that reflect the broader racial diversity in America. The way that the federal government has been a real path to the middle class for, you know, countless Americans, regardless of race, regardless of ideology, to serve their country. This is a potent threat, and it's one that Kevin Roberts and his allies outside of the Heritage Foundation, like I mentioned, Vance and others, are eager to implement. And it's deeply, deeply dangerous. And it's one that, as you point out, Rose, it doesn't go away if Biden were to win, because these groups are going to continue to try to move this, I think what many consider to be a sort of fascist agenda forward. And they have a lot of money coming in from some a handful of big billionaires and secret sourcing to do so. But I think that their agenda is so unpopular in many ways, which is why there's this effort to distance from it. And there's also this effort to basically take over the election levers of power, to change the way elections are conducted in order to, you know, basically dominate where they don't have power. And I would be remiss if I didn't say there's a brand new article out this week about how the Heritage Foundation has already sort of tried to pregame the 2024 election and plant the notion that it's already been supposedly stolen by the Democrats. Therefore, they have to take extraordinary measures in order to seize the levers of power. It's just, the radicalism is truly astonishing, and we have to come together to counter it, in part by being aware of it and standing up for, you know, our traditional American systems and the American way, and have confidence actually that our elections have not been taken by fraud, by this big lie that Trump and his allies have put forward. In fact, every single legitimate study of American electoral politics has demonstrated there is no widespread fraud. It's just that some people don't like it when they lose.
That is Lisa Graves, founder and executive director of True North Research, an investigative watchdog group that shines a light on the dark money fueling regressive agendas. We're also joined by Rachel Leingang. Rachel covers democracy and misinformation for The Guardian. Ann Nelson is a lecturer in the fields of international affairs, media, and human rights. Her latest book is Shadow Network, Media, Money, and the Secret Hub of the Radical Right. We have a number of callers who've been waiting patiently, so let's go through a few and then we'll get responses. Let's start with Helene in Oakland. Hi, Helene. Thank you for holding.
Good morning. Thank you so much for this program. I saw a film called Bad Faith yesterday, and as I've watched it, it's an hour and a half. It's a documentary. You can go online, and for 99 cents, you can view it on YouTube. And as I watched it, it all made sense. Project 2025 and how this was created, it all made sense to me that it's the Christian nationalism, people who want to take over the government because, why? Because they want to have their own agenda, which has nothing to do with democracy. It has to do with the rise of Christian nationalists and implementing what they want. So, as I'm listening today, I'm wondering if you would agree that that film really does, it doesn't talk at all about Project 2025, but it really tells us how we got here.
Thank you for that. We did a show about Bad Faith last month with the director, Stephen Ulaki, and we're definitely going to have him on the show again. It is a really important documentary. Thank you for bringing that up. We'll get a response in just a few minutes. Let's first go to Alicia in Berkeley. Hi, Alicia. Thank you for holding.
Thank you for taking my call, and also thank you so much for doing this, because I'm surprised that I'm not hearing more about this from the from Biden's campaign. Two nights before I watched the unfortunate debate, John Oliver ran down exactly like you guys are what the horror of what this 2025 project would be. And I naturally expected to hear a lot about it during the debate, but there wasn't a word spoken about it, and of course not from Trump, who seems to be trying to kind of divide himself from it temporarily. So my question would be, do your guests know anything about what the campaign is doing to punch this up and get more media time for it? Because I think we really need to do that. And before I go, I just want to make one comment about the Schedule F thing. As an environmentalist, what I'm really, really worried about is that the plan is to remove all the experts in the area of whatever, you know, agency they're taking people out of, and then put in place clueless, you know, corporate people who will just, you know, yes man everything that they want to do in terms of positive changes we've made in the environment, and basically destroy the EPA. So I'm worried, and I hope everybody else gets to know about this and gets worried too. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. We also did a show about the plan to completely dismantle U.S. climate policies, and we're definitely going to do another one about that. You can find that show at yourcallradio.org. To your point about how the Democrats are responding, Rachel has a piece about how the Democrats plan to run Project 2025 ads in swing states, and we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. But let's hear from one more caller, and then we'll get responses. Suzanne in Hillsburg. Hi, Suzanne. Welcome to the show.
Hi there, Rose. We all love your program, and we love you. So
thank you.
I may be very naive, but aren't they trying to have our country communistic? And what about, I'm not going to say Republican, Democratic, what about the people that don't want this? And isn't there more people in the United States that don't want this? How can it be done for them?
Well, thank you for the call. There have been some polling on Project 2025, and a lot of people are saying this is why Trump is trying to distance himself from it, even though so many of the people behind Project 2025 are working with him now or worked in the first administration. So why don't we take these questions as they came in? First off, the Christian nationalist connections to Project 2025. Anne, do you want to take that one?
Rose, as it happens, Bad Faith is largely based on my book, Shadow Network.
Oh, right. You're in it. You're in the documentary.
I'm the one in the red sweater and the wrinkled blue blouse. But yeah, Stephen Ulaki did a wonderful job in, as he says, connecting the dots and telling us how we got there. So I think it's a real contribution, and people can find it on Amazon Prime and YouTube and other places. And yes, the Democrats are trying to tell people about Project 2025, and Trump has been scrambling a bit. He even claimed that he didn't know the people behind it, even though he's spoken at the Heritage Foundation and said that they were laying the groundwork for his next administration. For me, the real tell is the person Russ Vought. Now, he wrote the chapter on presidential powers in Project 2025, which basically takes a lot of the checks and balances in our government and removes them and invests more and more power in the single figure of the president. He is one of the three men on the committee to write the Republican Party platform, and he is in charge of policy. So it is disingenuous to suggest that Trump will have nothing to do with the content of Project 2025.
And what else can you tell us about Christian nationalism and how that is plays in Project 2025?
I see it as a very cynical way of finding a pool of low information voters, which Ralph Reed said he was going to do some years ago. And a lot of these evangelicals, you know, have invested a lot of confidence in their pastors. And so there's been this prolonged effort to oblige these churches to tell their people to vote and to tell them how to vote. And it's done through a combination of persuasion and pressure and even bullying. They even have something called My Church Finder now that gives churches grades on how MAGA the pastor is. And if the pastor isn't delivering the Trump message from the pulpit, they're told to change churches or change pastors. So when you're looking at swing states, whether it's Michigan or North Carolina or Arizona, these churches have a lot of weight in their community. And they also, through the swing state phenomenon in our electoral system, have an undue amount of influence in the outcome. Because if they collect the votes for the electoral college, you can have a majority of the rest of the public voting for the other party and still lose.
What about the question around what Democrats are doing to raise awareness about this? We've talked about this a few times. Representative Jared Huffman of Northern California announced a new working group to stop Project 2025. It's mostly progressive Democrats. Rachel, you have a piece out about Democrats planning to put up billboards in swing states that tie Donald Trump to Project 2025. According to the plan that was first shared with you, 36 billboards in English and Spanish will go up in 9 cities and 7 battleground states, including Detroit, Lansing, Grand Rapids, Philadelphia, Phoenix, Charlotte, a few more cities. Can you tell us more about this? And then really that larger question, based on the people you've interviewed, do they think Biden has what it takes to really communicate Project 2025 to the public?
So the billboard plan, I think, is one of the most visible ways that the Biden campaign is trying to get the word out about it. We've seen the Biden campaign, you know, do a lot of social media that says basically Google Project 2025. I do think it was expected to come up in the first debate based on, you know, the campaign put up a webpage that was all about Project 2025. It certainly would have been an effective strategy to bring it up during the debate. It did not come up. I think the criticism that the caller made of why aren't Democrats talking about this is very, you know, they could be doing a lot more on this front. And I think they probably will as time goes on. I think that strategically, those running Democratic campaigns right now find that bringing up Project 2025 is one way to remind voters of the stakes of this election and remind them what the Trump administration was like and how a second Trump administration could go far further than that. Whether that, you know, it has been effectively conveyed so far, I think there's you know, probably a lot more to do. Certainly just me as a consumer of news, I've seen a lot on, you know, people sharing infographics on Instagram far more frequently, YouTube and TikTok influencers talking a lot more about this. I think, you know, at best, a lot of people are starting to hear about it and now either trying to understand what it means and what it could mean for them. And that'll be something that Democratic strategists likely, you know, latch onto for the coming months here. And one thing I wanted to note that, you know, the Trump administration has tried to distance himself from it. And I think that's partly because of comments that Kevin Roberts made about a second American Revolution that would remain bloodless if the left allowed it. Certainly controversial comments that Trump didn't want to be aligned with. But when we've reported on this, we've really broken down what Trump has said on similar things to show that their policies are often aligned. That, I think, is the way to really show that not only does Trump know the people involved and have ties to them, and many of them work for him, but their policies are similar, if not the same in some instances. So the attempt to distance there really rings pretty hollow.
You know, we're almost out of time. Before we talk about the Suzanne's question about how people, so many people don't want this. Rachel, I just want to ask you, what really stood out for you when you did your research about the Heritage Foundation's president, Kevin Roberts? You write that he has a PhD in American history from the University of Texas at Austin. He taught history at the college level before founding a Catholic K through 12 school. He was the president of Wyoming Catholic College. He got a headline in the New York Times in 2015 after rejecting any federal student aid. So no student aid, because he said it would compromise the college's stance against LGBTQ plus people and covering birth control with health insurance. Then hired in 2016 by the Texas Public Policy Foundation, and the Heritage Foundation named him president in 2021. So I just wanted to go over some of the things that you laid out in your piece, but what struck you during your research about Kevin Roberts?
Yeah, as you laid out there, his rise in conservative politics has been fairly swift. He's a younger man, I think he's 50, and a very devout Catholic. And certainly that informs his views on public policy and I believe how he leads the Heritage Foundation. And for some, that they're not, you know, some conservatives, they don't believe that the, you know, increased interest in, you know, the quote unquote culture wars is a good move for Heritage, which they believe should be more focused on fiscal conservatism. It really stood out to me as well in Mr. Roberts' foreword for Project 2021. He rails against elites throughout and this belief in woke culture, but this is a person with a PhD who leads a Washington think tank. That is an elite position if I've ever heard of one. So there's, you know, this underpinning that elites are running society and we need to drive them out. And I think that informs a lot of the policies that are, you know, put together in Project 2025.
Hmm. You know, I'd love to have all of you back because we need to spend more time talking about this. This would not be getting as much attention if the Democrats were not losing to so many of these extreme far-right politicians. I mean, we can do an entire show about why that's the case. Lisa, if you want to briefly talk about why you think that's happening. I mean, there are many layers to it. But then can you also address Suzanne's question about the fact that so many people do not want this in the United States? And we have about 2 or so minutes left. Let's say 3 minutes left. I know I gave you a big question there.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I actually see there a lot of movement among progressives, Democrats, moderates, and independents, including Never Trumpers, against this Project 2025. So I'm actually extremely hopeful about how much awareness there is and how many people in the political arena as well as outside the political arena are really shining a light on it. I was going to say Alicia's spot on about, you know, the risk to climate from the changes that would be wrought under Project 2025. But I wanted to touch on 2 points that Suzanne made. One about, like, is this communistic? I would say only in the sense of, like, post-communist Putin sort of affinity, because one of the Project 2025 agenda items would be for the U.S. to abandon its commitment to NATO allies and in support for Ukraine against Putin. So it really would be a big win for Putin, which is not surprising given how right-wing this agenda is, and also the way the Heritage Foundation has really kissed up to Viktor Orban, along with, you know, Trump and others from the far right in America. But the second thing is, to your point about people don't want this. Yeah, people don't want this. These ideas are radical, as I mentioned, reactionary. The Heritage Foundation has been circulating a video about restoring the consequentiality of sex, meaning consequences, disease, pregnancy of sex. They've also, part of this Heritage 2025, Project 2025 agenda is, you know, directly assailing access to abortion medicine, to use criminal law to criminalize the sending of abortion medicine, to make it harder to access contraception. At one point, they even say because women don't themselves use condoms, that preventative information for women should not include information about condoms. It also includes a wholesale attack on the rights of LGBTQ Americans, including marriage equality. You know, one of the most fundamental ideas, I think, of freedom is being able to marry the person you love. And so this agenda is deeply unpopular, which I think is why some people on the right don't want to talk about it, want to distance themselves from it. But we have to talk about it. And as you mentioned, Rose, there's more to talk about it. So I'd love to come back and join you all. to continue this conversation. I think it's vitally important, not just in this moment, but for the future of America and what America looks like, not to become this dystopian, autocratic, repressive, regressive regime, but to actually lean into the promise of America, the promise of the Constitution, and how we can be a thriving multiracial democracy in America that really advances in this 21st century to protect our climate and to protect people's freedoms.
Anne, final thoughts from you. We have about a minute left.
Yeah, Lisa's absolutely right. This document and these people are so radical. They want to be able to fire someone from their job simply for being gay. They want to ban gay adoption. This is a wholesale attack on our fellow citizens and basic civil and political rights, not just against them, but against many others. So I think people should get past the whole horse race coverage of the election and figure out that what's at stake in November is the way we live our daily lives.
Thank you for that, Anne. To definitely get past the horse race coverage. Anne Nelson is a lecturer in the fields of international affairs, media, and human rights. Her latest book is Shadow Network, Media, Money, and the Secret Hub of the Radical Right. Lisa Graves is founder and executive director of True North Research, an investigative watchdog group that follows the money. Rachel Langang covers democracy and misinformation for The Guardian. She wrote a profile of the Heritage Foundation's president, Kevin Roberts. Lisa, Rachel, and Anne, thank you for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you can learn more about all of the articles and the information that we shared today by going to kalw.org. Thanks to Savannah Harriman-Pote for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And thank you for joining us. Tune in next Monday to learn more about what exactly is in the far right's 900-page authoritarian playbook, Project 2025. I'm Rose Aguilar. This is KALW, San Francisco Bay Area.